to spend a short time each time we gather to think about our responsibility towards others. After all, that is fundamental to our role. So in amongst the need for vision setting, vision casting, strategic thinking, communication, talk preparation, and so on, in amongst all of that valuable work, we are fundamentally leaders of church planting teams, or we will be. Or we could be leaders of ministry teams. But the point is, God has entrusted us with people, and we have a particular role to fulfill within that team, and our role is to lead them. And I want us to think about that briefly each time we get together. So what are we as leaders? And in particular, I want to encourage you to think about what others in your team need from you, so that you can think through what you need to provide. And at this point, it may be that we need to be realistic and honest about where we are and how we're feeling. We are emerging from a pandemic. It is entirely possible that we might struggle to lift our eyes and move our hearts towards others. You may have found during the pandemic you were concerned primarily for yourself and your immediate family and not others. We might discover perhaps that there is less in the tank in terms of, you know, the resources of love than we thought. And as we press the accelerator to give ourselves to others, we discover we just sort of splutter to a halt. So I think to have this obligation and the realization that we have an obligation towards others may not be uppermost in our thinking. And I want, in one sense, to get out ahead of that and address that and think about what are our obligations to those in our teams. So the headline for this week is simply this: what they need is our love. So the men and the women, the children in our team, what they need from us is our love. Let's rehearse some basics. In essence, love, of course, is seeking others' well-being. Let me say that again. Love is seeking others' well-being. It is doing what's best for them. This is the servant-hearted leadership exemplified by the Lord Jesus Christ, of course. But let's go somewhere else first. Listen to these words from the Apostle Paul about his trusted ministry colleague, Timothy, whom he sent to Ephesus to help pastor the church there. In verse 19, of chapter 2 of Philippians, Paul writes this: I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you soon, that I also may be cheered when I receive news about you. So the idea was Timothy was to go and to come back with news, and Paul himself would be cheered. I have no one else like him who will show genuine concern for your welfare. For everyone looks out for their own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. But you know that Timothy has proved himself, because as a son with his father, he has served with me in the work of the gospel. I hope, therefore, to send him as soon as I see how things go with me. And I'm confident in the Lord that I myself will come soon. Timothy, then, was exceptional in the apostles' estimation because he showed a genuine concern for their welfare. The word concern in that phrase implies worry. Literally, Timothy was anxious for them. That is what made him a standout candidate. You see, Paul says, usually everyone looks out for their own interests, but not Timothy. He looked out for the interests of others. Except, of course, that's not what it says, is it? It says that he looked out for the interests of Jesus Christ. In other words, I think he embodied the pattern of leadership modeled by Jesus in Philippians 2, which is this: self-sacrifice for the sake of the salvation of others. Timothy exemplified that. Onesiphorus exemplified that. It's Jesus' pattern of ministry, isn't it? Self-sacrifice for the sake of the salvation of others. It's love. And that's what Timothy did well. No one else did it like that. No, everyone else looks out to their own interest, not Timothy. He's a Jesus man. And so you see that pattern of leadership in Timothy. And where does he get it from? Chapter 2, verse 3. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of the others. And that is, of course, what the Lord Jesus was doing. So look, what I'm trying to say to you is very simply is this. What your team needs from you is your love. They need you to be genuinely concerned about their welfare. They need you to love them. And you need to do that by showing real interest in what's going on, a genuine concern for their well-being. That is what your team needs from you, and probably more so at the moment than at any time in our ministry lives. What people need from us is our love. And that, of course, is the essence of leadership. After all, God is the first leader. He is love. And so love flows from him in his leadership. In his book, Wisdom in Leadership, Craig Hamilton puts it this way. God is the original and model leader. He invented leadership and was the first to lead. God is love. He has been for eternity, which means that his leadership flows from, is driven by, is energized by, and characterized by love. So if his leadership is the leadership from which all other leadership derives its name, then my leadership is only true leadership to the degree that is marked by other person-centered love. I think that is a terrific quote. There's lots of discussion at the moment, isn't there, about what leadership is, what does it look like? You can go around the country at the moment and look at typically respected Anglican leaders who now find themselves accused of not being the kind of leaders that the churches wanted. We've often used the phrase, haven't we, you know, he's a strong leader, and you know, and it's code. And I remember we had an eldership, we had a partnership meeting actually a few months ago, might have been a year ago, where I think we decided we'd not use that word strong because, you know, it's just unhealthy. But actually strong leadership, I don't mind it as long as what we mean by it is it's loving leadership. A strong leadership is loving, you know, in other words, you know, on the scale of 0 to 10, you know, the love that drives and characterizes that leadership is up at 8, 9, and 10. That's strong leadership. But of course, that's not what we typically mean when we talk about that. So here you go. How does that then sit then with the role we have of leading them? Because I think we tend to force those two things apart, don't we? There are leaders and there are lovers. And the loving people love people. And they are generally concerned for others' interests. The leaders lead people and get stuff done and make things happen. These guys, well, they don't make anything happen. You know, they're just too busy loving people. Whereas these guys haven't got time for that. But boy, do they tick off the task list. So what do we do with that? How do we put those two things together, which I think typically we keep apart? I think we get the concept of love, we get the concept of leadership, but we do struggle to put the two together. After all, a leader leads others in the performance of a task. Typically, you tell people what to do, they do it. The bottom line is we're trying to get something done and people make that task happen. So people become a means to an end. The end is really significant. People contribute to that. They're human resources that help us sort of execute a task. So what does love look like? What does leadership look like? What does a loving leadership look like in that context? And I think it's more than simply asking nicely. Everything we do in how we lead others must be driven by love and characterized by love. If I can put it this way, the motive of our leading is love, and the manner of our leading is love. It's leading in such a way that we seek to get the task done, we are nevertheless seeking their well-being. See, I think that changes the way we consult. In other words, first of all, we will consult. We respect them. We love them. We think it's actually in your interests for you to think about this task and contribute to this. So let's have a discussion. That's love. I think it changes the way we communicate. In other words, people aren't a gopher. This is what I need doing. Can you make that happen? It's actually saying, okay, just so you understand this, this is how what you would be doing would contribute. Here's the rationale. It's taking people seriously. It's honoring them. It's loving them. It's helping them, in one sense, get the buy-in and see where they fit in the cog. I think there is a loving consultation. There is a loving communication. I think it changes the way that we delegate. So it's not just, okay, now you get it, go and do it. It's now you get it, and now you've contributed to it. You do need to do it, but the way in which you do it is changing. In other words, as you grow in your familiarity with the task and your competence in that task and your excitement for that task, I don't need to delegate the same way that I used to. I remember being blown away a couple of years ago. I think it was probably Matt Fuller who gives me most of the good stuff I get. I think he directed me to something called the six ways of delegation. Actually, it might have been Matt Beebe, actually. And I was like, what? So my background is I'm ex-Navy. Armed services. And there is one way to make things happen, which is go and do this. Yes, sir. There you go. Done and dusted. So the military model of leadership works insofar as you can perpetuate a hierarchical society and you punish people who disobey that. It tends not to work in volunteer organizations. So to discover that actually there are multiple ways of delegating for me was a game changer, realizing I don't need to be this thoughtless gopher. But the only reason I'm doing what I'm doing is because either you don't like the task or you haven't got time for the task. There's a form of delegation which acknowledges actually you could be familiar with the task. You know the task better than I do now. We want the end result, which is for argument's sake, run a children's evangelistic event. Okay, there you go. There's the end result. And in the down here, you basically say, this is when we do it. This is how you do it. This is what you need to make it happen. And you just give people a checklist. Over here, it's, look, do we need a children's event? What could it look like? What's your thinking? Do you want to go and think about that on your own? Come back and let me know. When it's done, that's a high level of trust. When you want to run things past me or whatever. But I think loving leadership doesn't leave people down here as thoughtless gophers, but looks to develop and grow people, developing their capacity to participate. I think loving leadership means that it's got to change the way that we evaluate. In other words, we have got an obligation to tell people the truth. And to say, look, you did that brilliantly. I think there are areas for development there. I wonder whether if you were to do that differently, there might have been a different outcome. That would be my reflection. In other words, we're committed to seeing people develop and get better and learn and become self-aware. That all I'm describing here is, I think, the way in which we're putting leadership and loving together. So I think the key question is, okay, when a loving leadership, we're saying, okay, we're giving stuff to people, we're serving them, we're giving them our love. I think it's worth asking, what do you need from me? We're not using people as means to an end. We're actually taking them seriously. Now, I'll stop at this point because I want to give you some time to discuss. I guess the question then is, how do we love people? I've given us some direction of travel, but I wonder whether there's value in having a more broad discussion. So turn to your neighbor and explore ways that you think your leadership needs to be characterized by love. So how does your leadership, what you do and the way in which you lead your team, how does that need to be characterized by love? And be somewhat self-critical. And ask yourself, because what your people need from you at the moment is your love. So it'd be good to explore ways in which you're doing that well. Perhaps you could do that better. Okay. So turn to your neighbor, explore ways that you think your leadership needs to be characterized by love. How long have we got, Andy? We've got. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Look, give you a good 5-10 minutes to thrash that through, and Andy will sort the chat rooms out.